Good morning, everybody. I'd like to call to order the set-aside procurement program subcommittee for today. Appreciate everybody being here. I'd like to ask for a quick roll call for the record.
Thomas Colombo.
Here.
Rick Crago.
Here.
Stephen King is absent. Richard Monaco.
Here.
Manuel Salazar.
Here.
Okay, alrighty. Thank you everybody for your attendance and our visitors today. I'd like to move on with the agenda item number three, the discussion. First one, procedural decisions and guidelines for the state, for the set-aside subcommittee for review. I'm not sure, we have the assignment process, proposal process, general guidelines, and how to measure the set-aside, so forgot who we had assigned the assignment process to.
Yeah, no, I have the first two.
You have the first two, okay.
Yeah. So there's a couple of handouts there if you didn't get them when you came in. So the whole idea behind this, last time we talked about, we had a little slide on the assignment process and the proposal process. And so what these forms try to do is follow sort of the framework that we had set up last time, and also try to line up with the statute itself and ask, you know, not real detailed questions, but just some preliminary questions about what you would be interested in doing for set-aside. So the idea here is that first you get an assignment, and then you come back later with a proposal. The idea of the assignment process is to make sure that you're not doing something that maybe is already being provided and there isn't room for another person to, or another nonprofit to do it. It's the idea that you're giving the committee fair warning that this is being developed and it's not a surprise when it comes to us later on, so we can have it on the docket and review it. So first comes the assignment, and I have, if we can just sort of walk through the instructions first of the assignment. Basically, this is a Word document that you can tap to the fields, and it'll be a fill-in document, and I assume that someday we'll have all these things up on our website, all the things that we've done, definitions, different things that we've done up on our website, and it'll all be there. You know, we're saying that if a product, you know, comes in various sizes or colors, it can be listed on the same form. However, if it's a different item, then it's a separate form. So what we're doing is, you know, if you have variations of the same product, you can do it all on one form. You don't have to make 20 different forms if it's 20 variations of the same thing. But if it's a different product, then you can use a different form for each one. And you're agreeing to, the intent is that you're going to go through a development process within a six-month assignment period. So it's not that the assignment would only last for 6 months. It's the idea that you're going to show significant progress towards, you know, a proposal in the six-month time frame. So if you've submitted an assignment, say, back in January, and in May you're looking at, well, I'm probably not, things are going well, but I've got more work to do, I've hit this little, you know, bump in the road. You just inform the committee that, you know, a little report that says, you know, we're making progress, but we need to extend the assignment, and that will be fine. So it's just the idea, I had to try to put some time frame out there that would be reasonable for people to get an assignment and get to a proposal. So the form is fairly simple, I think. Request, you know, it's just the date of the assignment, what's your nonprofit's name, who's the point of contact, what's the project name or service name that you're looking at. You know, you can use the product name, if you will. And then a description of the product or service. You know, you know, if you're doing this for the first time, just do the best you can, and I think we'll get better at it as we go along. When we get down to the description, What we're saying is this is a detailed product description so that ADOA staff can assess and ensure that new assignments do not significantly impact other assignments reserved for development or are currently on state set aside contract. So we want to understand what it is that you're going to do. And the next section there is, you know, describe the direct labor functions that are going to be performed by people who are disabled. Because as we did last time, we defined the definition of our program purpose. So that ties into, let's make sure that what you're going to do is going to generate employment for people with disabilities. And also, you know, looking at the requirement that 60% of the direct labor is going to be performed by people with disabilities. And so I just referenced the statute there, and then I also just state that we've already defined value added, and it's got to meet the requirement of value added, the project does. Value added is simply saying you can't just take and buy a cup and relabel it and ship it. There's got to be some form of significant labor involved with the process that's being performed by people with disabilities. And so that's all that's doing there. So we flip the page into the second page. These next three questions come directly from the statute. Are the materials readily available? Are you capable of timely delivery? And are you capable of meeting the quality and price requirements? That's to give the committee an indication that you paid attention to that. And you're going to just say yes or no on the form itself. And if you say no, then you got to provide an explanation. I would think that no one would turn in an assignment request with a no on it, but you never know. And then projected disabled hours the best you can. Expected, what are you expecting to do in terms of hours for people who are disabled? What are your projected sales? What do you think this thing is going to do at the time of the assignment? You may not know. It would be an estimate that you would give. If you have a brand name partner, if you're willing, or if you're working with someone, sometimes we do have companies that partner with nonprofits to create employment for people with disabilities by them supplying maybe the basic raw materials or of their product, and then the nonprofit completes that process and creates employment doing it. So we'd want to know that those kinds of situations. Mandatory, that's what you in your original thinking and processes that you're going through, you would be saying, I think this should be mandatory or non-mandatory. You're going to make the call what you think it should be. Okay. Let us know. In some cases, there would be situations where people are already providing whatever it is that they're wanting to put on set aside. So you might have some existing customers. And then, have you contacted any customers or customer? So that the committee's trying to get a feel when we talk about customers, is there a need in the marketplace for this? And our marketplace is state and local government entities, and so trying to get a feel if there's a market for it. And have you identified any procuring activities which your organization will target? And we want you to be specific rather than just say, yeah, the state of Arizona. It'd be nice if it were ADOT or DES or Health and Human Services or where it's going to be. And do you have any literature, you would provide that, and any other information. So this would be completed, and the request is that it be turned in at the very top, going flipping back over, it would be turned in 45 days in advance of the set-aside committee meeting. And the 45 days is to give ADOA a couple of weeks to review it and answer questions that we have for them once they get it. And this is just an ADOA review. Is there a need for the product or service? If they can determine that. We don't expect them to make up answers, but to their best knowledge and best understanding, maybe doing a little bit of research, answer that question. Is there any impact on current contracts? Sometimes we hear that when we get a request. What do they think about mandatory? No, it can't be mandatory because of this, or yeah, it could be mandatory. And then their recommendation for assignment, and then submit the form to Betty at ADOA. So then the form itself, if you flip to the next page, the form itself is just the blank version of what we just went through. And this is a fillable form, if you will. Well, it's a Word document. And you should be able to just go in and type, and the box areas will expand if you type more information than space is given there, and you probably will in a lot of cases. So then at the end of that time, and I did not put it in the process here, but ADOA, after using their 2 weeks, would get this out to committee members prior to a quarterly meeting, so they have a chance to review it, and then it goes for discussion and a vote, yes, this is on assignment. Okay, it's a little bit more formal process. I think too many times I've seen in the past, people just walk into the meeting and they have a proposal. We don't spend enough time really reviewing it, and this kind of tightens up that process a little bit. So we also have documentation that shows that we've done our due diligence in making the assignment. So once the assignment's made, we're going to now, the nonprofit, or Arizona Correctional Industries, or Arizona Industries for the Blind, would go through a process of then development. So they're going to go through the process of making sure that it, you know, meets the requirements, and at a later date they're going to prepare a proposal. And we've given them 6 months, like I said before. That period can be extended. I just chose 6 months because it seemed reasonable. I would hope that most people that prepare an assignment, request for assignment, are very committed to making that happen. And I would think that most proposals come before the 6 month period. But, you know, for sure. And it can be extended. So the proposal itself is very similar form, asking basically it's a lot of the same questions, but you're updating it for everything you know at this point in time. You've probably gotten into the project a little bit deeper. You understand you know, how it's going to work now. You've gone through the details, and so you're just coming back now, and you know, in some cases it probably can be a cut and paste from the assignment form just into this one, but if there is anything new to update, we want to know about that. Especially as it relates to, I'll just flip to the second page of the proposal. Especially as it relates to the description of the product or customers. So on the second page, we begin asking, we're now going to ask you to attach the product cost or service cost analysis. Okay, that form that we had approved. So it's going to be part of the proposal submission. Again, there are exceptions. I think we noted that. If I go back to the product and service cost analysis, I think there was some concern about exposing certain information, and I think we wrote some language in there. I can't remember exactly what it is, but there is an out. But anyway, in a normal process, you would attach that. And then you're also going to give us some documentation on fair market price. Our definition, what I used in the required statement that's here on the instructions, in determining fair market price, provide the state set aside committee with one or more of the following. And one or more of the following is what we defined when we defined fair market price. So that's right from our definition. That you're going to go get information that backs up the price that you're proposing, and that it is fair market. Now, not everything will meet, will fit in a nice, neat package in that area, but you do the best you can with that. Projected sales, you should probably know a little bit more. You know, brand partner. You're going to repeat that information, mandatory, existing customers, have you contacted the customer, proposed customers, those are the same, but it's just updating it if there's any new information. And then we're going to ask something new, just for you to put into words, how do you think this is going to benefit state and local government, whatever product or service this is. And so this set-aside committee can see where it's all going, and it's literature and other information. So it's very similar with a couple of two or three new areas. Most importantly is fair market value and the costing. So very similar to the assignment, but now this is the proposal, the real one. Then it's going to go to ADOA, and they're going to have some similar questions. Is there a need for the product or service? And what I envision here is again, they're doing some research. They might even be talking to the certified nonprofit agency directly, asking some questions. But what they're doing is some preliminary work prior to the quarterly meeting. So the different question here is the agency capable of producing and delivering the product or service that will meet the reasonable requirements of the state and local government? That's, again, right out of the statute, very similar thing that we're supposed to be looking for that's in the statute. And it's a yes or a no. And I think it often becomes one of the concerns that we have when we're looking at an assignment or a proposal is, can you fulfill the need just in the Phoenix area, or is it Phoenix and Tucson, or what are you going to do with Northern Arizona? You know, what are you going to do with the rural communities? So it's kind of addressing, you know, are you proposing this just for a specific geographic location, a particular county? You know, what are you doing, and trying to clarify that? Okay, and then the ADOA is going to. They don't, again, I want to present this as, they don't always have to make a recommendation, but it would be nice if they, you know, did say a few words about, yeah, I think this will work, or these might be some reasons we should take a closer look at this, or whatever it is. Going through some kind of a process that gives the committee some good information from which to make a decision when it ultimately comes to a vote. So then these are asked to be in about 30 days prior to the quarterly set-aside meeting in advance. And again, giving a couple of weeks for the ADOA to kind of do their thing, and then hopefully a couple of weeks prior to the meeting, the proposal goes out and the committee can review. And then come to the meeting prepared to discuss and vote. Okay, so that's the whole idea behind this. It's a more formal process. It gives everybody a set of guidelines to follow, information. Everybody knows what information we're looking for. I think one of the complaints that we've had over the years is, what do you guys want from us? I got an idea for a proposal. What is it that you want? I'm not sure where to go, who to talk to, what to present. And I think this has made it, I actually think this makes it a whole lot simpler rather than just leaving people out. Now, we're not asking for, and this is a point of discussion today. I have not asked for a business plan. Did you know? There's no business plan here. Okay. We're not asking you to prepare some elaborate document that everybody has trouble understanding what the format should be, what should I include, what should I not include. This, I believe, is the key information. And we'll make the assumption that you can execute whatever it is you're turning in. If you do get it on set aside, remember there's a review process every year that says, have you adequately provided this service? And ADOA is supposed to go through that process to renew. If you haven't done what you're supposed to do, ADOA should be looking and talking to you and saying, this isn't working.
How's that policed or monitored, though?
I don't know, but that's what we're supposed to be doing here. I would say probably they may have gotten some complaints, or something like that might have happened.
And then what's the definition of a disability under the ADA standards and regulations?
I don't have it right in front of me, but it's I know what it is for blindness. I don't have it right in front of me, but we use the definition the federal definition of, well, actually, I believe a disability.
It's any disability that impacts their ability to perform work on that particular type of function.
It's in the statute, isn't it?
It's in the statute, yeah. I can read it to you. We use that, the definition that's in the statute. It says, disabled individual means an individual who, because of the nature of the individual's disabilities, is not able to fully participate in competitive employment, and for whom specialized employment and training is necessary. That's the definition of disability in the statute.
So I'm legally blind, with correction, I've got 20/20 vision without.
You're not legally blind.
What I'm saying, though, without the correction, I'm qualified as legally blind.
No, you're not.
Why is that?
Legally blind definition is best corrected vision. You have to have.
And again,
you have to have everything that's available in terms of glasses or whatever, and you're still less than 20/200.
And that goes back to the reason I asked that question, is I don't have an understanding of what qualifies for disabilities.
Okay. You have to have a medical certification to work in the nonprofits, for instance, ours, and Manny can talk to his. We have to have a medical certification that the individual is legally blind. So that comes from a doctor.
Got it.
Okay. They cannot work for us unless they meet those requirements. And the requirements, basically, they have to meet the federal definition of legal blindness, which is vision of 20/200 or less, best corrected vision.
Got it.
Or they have tunnel vision.
And that would apply to whatever the other disabilities might be.
Then, but that's blindness.
Right.
And then the other disabilities.
Well, one of the ones that people may question the most is even PTSD is considered a disability, which physically speaking, you would talk to this person and view this person and never notice a disability that they have.
Right.
However, they can't maintain competitive employment or be employed for very long because of their PTSD. So, because it makes them act a certain way. So that is
a certified medical exam.
Yeah.
Yes, a certified medical exam. Yeah. The actual nonprofit organization is not making that determination.
No,
they don't make the determination. It's made by a you know, doctors, third party medical community makes that determination.
Yeah.
Has basically said that they're disabled.
Got it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a piece, you know, again, we're trying to build on this and formalize the process. So now you see how the service cost analysis and product cost analysis fit in with the proposal. But again, didn't ask for a business plan. So I guess I'm asking the committee, is this enough information from which we can make a decision? Right? There's always the ability to ask questions from the proposal form.
I don't think we need a business plan. I mean, that's my thought on it.
I think this is a huge improvement on what was in existence mm-hmm. before. I think this really lends itself to get more information and more obligation to fulfill the needs of the set aside. So I think this is fantastic for what we're trying to achieve. Yeah, I agree. Business plan's not necessary for this. We're already businesses.
Yeah.
So
I guess that's one of the assumptions that I made. You know, most of us, you know, do something in related to providing a product or service for the community in some way, shape, or form. And that should be sort of a given that you understand business and understand the nature of things that are required to execute a proposal. So I don't know that we need to vote on it today. You know, I still think we're a ways away. And Tom, I guess I'm saying this maybe to you and Betty, the website still isn't quite ready, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but we've got to have a place to locate all this stuff, organize it, and have people access to it. And we've got to define ourselves, you know, our program, getting through these other things that we have. So I'm not sure that what the start date of these forms is. You know, what it should be, and maybe we need to, you know, we certainly need to take it to the full committee and have their thoughts and input as well. But
and that was my thought, is since it does need to go to the set aside committee, you know, the proper committee, I would almost think that we would need to vote on it here to move it forward.
To go to the, go on the agenda, correct.
Understanding that there are still some things that we would hope can be achieved, the website, other items. But I worry that if we don't do a vote on it now, it kind of delays it.
Yeah.
You know, out even a little bit further.
Yeah. I mean, you want to take it there so they can look at these documents and edit it if necessary, so that you can get a final document by the time we get the website.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to wait until we got into that on the agenda, but the product service analysis and the product and the service, they are both on the website as of now.
Oh, okay.
As we speak, and the CNADI form actually had.
Certification.
The certification, application for certification, the most updated form is on the website as well. And the fact of any current set-aside contracts that we have, if you go and click on the set-aside website and click onto the database, it will also have all the current updated contracts as we speak, and defining mandatory versus not.
Okay, I hadn't been on for a while. So
yeah, good. So it's all of that is on there. So once we make the decision to move this to go toward the board, then these will be the other additions. So that's already out there.
Okay.
Well, with that being said, I think it'd be appropriate to ask for a move to move this forward, and let's see if we can second it so we can vote on it.
Okay. Yeah, move that we put this on the agenda with these forms for review by the committee.
For review, yeah. Yeah. Okay, second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? So ready for both the assignment and the proposal process, as Rick pointed out, for review by the committee, because you know, want to give them that chance as well. So if we can add that to the agenda for the subcommittee, I think that'd be great.
Got it.
The one last thing I'd say, Tom, is I'm not locked into, you know, the heading on here. I struggled with what it should look like, or you know, I put a little footer at the bottom. Mm-hmm. It might be able to be, you know, slick it up a little bit.
Right.
Make it look nicer. Yeah. I don't know, but.
And Betty, you would take care of format and structure. So.
You got it.
Okay. All right. Next couple bullets here, the guidelines for determining mandatory.
Yeah, I didn't do a lot of work on that this time. I can't remember, in the minutes from the last meeting, and I don't know that I saw the minutes from the last meeting, I probably did, but I can't remember. Did Steve say he was going to take that on? I just didn't remember.
I think so.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah, that's something, you know, and I think we've talked about this before. It's been such a difficult thing. You know, we had talked about what is the criteria that we kind of want to. What's the checklist to determine whether this product or service should be mandatory or not mandatory? And it's a tough area. And I just didn't spend any time on this last time. So.
Okay. Well, then I agree with you. I think Steve indicated he would do a little bit of work on that, so we can hold this one.
So we can table that.
Yep, hold this one for our next meeting. How to measure the set-aside goal of 1%?
Yeah, I don't have anything to hand out, but that still is.
It's by statute, right?
Say it again.
That's a statutory.
It's a statutory requirement.
To endeavor or whatever, right?
To endeavor.
Yeah.
The 1%. Yeah. I think where we where the disconnect is the actual reporting is not reflective of the true activity that's. Central or certified nonprofit agencies perform. So I don't have the report in front of me, but I've mentioned it on a number of occasions, and I'll just mention it again. I believe that there should be a cleansing of the report by going through each of the contracts that are on the report that gets reported quarterly to the governor from the director of ADOA to determine yes or no, are those true set-aside contracts? And the reason it's important is because I think we've been listing things. We've spent quite some time now defining who we are and what the purpose of the program is. So when you go now to review the listing and the contracts that are listed there, you're now doing it in the context of, are they meeting the definition of purpose of the program? And that is that we believe that 60% of the people performing on this contract should be people who are disabled. So I've made statements like, I've seen Catholic Social Services on there. I believe they have a contract, but I believe they're performing services for people in need. But the people performing those services, 60% of them are not disabled. So it's a contract to serve the needs of people who have disabilities or have, you know, other problems in life, but it's not lined up with our purpose and definition. And I don't know why that analysis can't be done, just to clean up the report. We had at one time, I heard the statement that the statement was, we're not going to go backwards and we're just going to let them drop off the report. I've seen nothing drop off. And I just don't know why, for the life of me, why that can't be cleaned up. And I look at Betty most of the time because she's ADOA. And I guess if Barbara were here, I'd be asking her. And it can't be just the discretion of the director. And I got a little bit in trouble when I said, I don't know that he has a choice to make that decision. He has to follow the guidelines of the statute. And she seemed to say that it was at her discretion, or his discretion. I always need to be careful in how I approach a subject matter like this, but it's just my opinion. Doesn't mean I'm right. It's just my opinion that it should be cleaned up and it should be done sooner than later.
Dick, can I make a... more to Dick's point, shouldn't a set-aside contract be awarded by the set-aside committee in order to make the list of set-aside contracts?
I think that was another point that was made in my discussion early on, is that I've never seen any of these contracts yet. They're considered set-aside right. contracts. So if they're not approved by this committee, how can they be set-aside contracts? And I want, for me personally, transparency is very important. If we have an obligation to report to the governor, president of the Senate, and speaker of the House, I think we have an obligation to report accurate, correct information. And as a committee member, it's unsettling to me that we're not.
Well, on this particular agenda that we had originally, yep. You know, I had one company that submitted information to me, the application for certification, you know, with their 501c, and they want to just, you know, be on the list, on the database list. So I am going to put that on the agenda for, you know, our July meeting. But in speaking with Barbara, it was also brought up to me to the fact that anytime anybody wants to do the application for certification or the assignment proposal and all of that, it's something that the committee should look at, you know, again, prior to it going to the actual board, and not just letting Department of Administration say, okay, yes, they have their 501c, and we've made that decision, and we, at this point, we want the committee to make a decision on everything that comes through right. The set aside. and not, you know, not just the assignments and proposals, just and the application for certification as well. So you're knowing who's going to be on that database or not. And actually, I have started working on that database to see who we currently have now and who's out of the company and if we want them to resubmit. So with these different forms that we have going on right now, once we make a decision and it's going before the board, then that's where we will move forward on cleansing the database.
Yeah, I think one of the things to look for would be there is a possibility that, and I don't know, but to go back and check and see who are all the certified nonprofits that have been approved by state set aside. And one of the things to look for is if Catholic Social Services at one time applied and was certified, that's fine. And they never proposed anything, that's also fine. They're still certified. But when you go in and run the report, you don't just run the names off, you know, part of it is to select all the names off of the list of certified nonprofit agency and run it against the database of contracts. But then there has to be another step. Is that truly a set-aside contract? Because I think what's happening now, and I don't know for sure, this is just speculation on my part, is that maybe Catholic Social Services or Easter Seals or some of these organizations that I've never seen any of their contracts, they are certified set-aside provider, and they do have service contracts, and it just sees the name and it pulls in the contract, therefore it gets on the list. And that's the only way I can think of how this is happening. But there has to be a step in between. So everything you said, I agree with. But we have to add a step that says, is this truly a set-aside approved contract? If not, it doesn't belong in the report.
Well, that's where we, Barbara and I, we are currently meeting with our accounting department as far as what dollar amounts are coming through versus on who we have on the set-aside database, and we are communicating with them as far as how to be able to pull that report off more efficiently on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm. What does an organization gain by being added as a set-aside participant but not necessarily on a contract? What is it? So why allow it unless they're actually bidding on a contract? If they were bidding on a contract, then you certify them as an organization, then also potentially award them a contract. But
well,
without actually taking some action on a contract, what's the purpose of it?
It is my understanding that those companies that are on that database that, say for example, you're on the database and you didn't have a contract with us, if they are approved, certified, then agencies can contact that individual company and say, I see that you're on that set-aside database as far as what it is that they have to offer, and then they can go into their own individual contract as a one-on-one with the agency and the company as well.
So that's
what it was.
That is a benefit.
Do you see what I'm saying? And so they might not have a contract for years, or they might not even have a proposal with us. But because their name is on the list, these agencies that are looking on this list are going to them first.
So then, if we allow for folks just to randomly apply to be listed as an agency, we're kind of allowing what we believe is happening with some other nonprofit agencies.
Yeah, if they're not vetted.
To gain set-aside contracts to say this counts towards that state's 1% to Endeavor,
I think,
but not actually being part of the set-aside. It's kind of perpetuating the problem.
You're saying not actually having a contract.
Yeah.
Because from what I understand, there's companies that are on that database right now that individuals are using,
I mean,
and we don't have a...
Is it possible for us to get the list of all the certified nonprofits that ADOA has in their database that they believe are certified nonprofits?
Sure, I can get that for you.
Okay. And then from that list, I believe what, you know, this is a little tricky, because what Betty's basically saying is if you're certified as a nonprofit, a CNA on state set-aside, you can circumvent the solicitation or bidding process.
You want it to be legitimized.
You want it to be, you want to make sure that those that are listed on the list, they're actually functioning in some way, shape, or form as a set-aside contractor.
Right, so that's why I'm saying.
They haven't just got certification, they got their name out there that says, oh, well, these guys can go to them directly without going out for bid. And that's a lot easier for procurement to have those opportunities.
Well, that's a good thing in us having our meeting right now, though. When someone is applying for the certification, what I'm saying is that it's going through the committee on the whole thing, not just DOA certifying them as a CNAUTI contract, and it should go through the committee.
Yes, and I agree with that.
And then that, I'm saying going forward, while we're having our discussions on our policies and procedures, you know, I'm just sharing with you from what I understand what had gone on in the past. And while we're having these meetings now and we're trying to establish policies and procedures, this is how we can go forward, and that includes the application for the certification.
So on the flip side of this, we were aware of a provider that was a member of APAT that's a CNAUTI. I think would have met the 60% requirement, as I understand it, but they had a contract with DHS that was not on the report. And so should that have been on the report? I don't know. But, you know, it wasn't on there when we were looking at it a year ago when we were trying to figure out how to boil down this list. So that would be sort of the reverse, too, of do you want that on the list or not? And then just two years ago when APAT was trying to look at increase in the requirement, so we had the endeavor to set aside 1%. We wanted to move that to 2 or 3%. What we heard back from ADOA is we don't need that 1% number. We're not even close to the 1% number, and so there's no way to require 2 or 3% because we're nowhere close. But the report didn't show that. So even the discrepancy in the information between the report and what ADOA was telling us was different. And that was sort of the pushback that we got, mm-hmm. was please don't require 2% or 3% statute because we are not even meeting the 1%, but yet the report sometimes showed we were pretty close to that. So there was a discrepancy in the information that we saw a couple years ago.
What data do you pull down for the report? I mean, where do you pull that information from?
GAO pulls the report monthly
and
sends it to our procurement office.
So it comes from payables.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, so people who are not on the e-procurement system still would show on there?
Probably not at this point. But all of those changes are being made come, you know, July 1.
Because you have a lot of people that weren't on the system.
And I'm not sure about everything, but I just also I think people need to be educated on you know, doing the reporting. Some people might not even know that, okay, you know, report this so that we can have.
Well, that's what I was wondering too, is the determination of whether they're set aside or not, is it part of their vendor structure, where, you know, is there a data indicator that shows that it's a set aside? Because how do you run the report? You pull it off of some kind of.
Right, and basically right now, from the way that I understand it, GAO is currently pulling it off of whoever is on that database.
You've got a database out there, and any of these got anybody on that database?
Right.
Any spend on that is reported.
And anyone that we add new going forward, we need to send them an email saying, okay, you know, this company is now.
So it's done on the payable side.
As them. As well, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
I have a question, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Being a nonprofit and a nonprofit that does set asides, but also a nonprofit that has large amounts of government contracts that are not set asides, that are not DDs, wouldn't just my being there skew that report if you're just pulling based on payables a lot? A lot, because I just from my personal accounts, I would be causing you a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why we got, you know, we should be, our target should be set aside, reporting on set aside contracts only. And somehow there needs to be a way to filter, you know, set up the reporting so that it filters and doesn't report on things that aren't, haven't gone through set aside, and reports only set aside approved contracts. I understand the possibility of people doing other things for the state of Arizona, but that was their choice.
Right.
I think when it comes to set aside, we're trying to report on the work that we're doing and how the state is supporting people with disabilities. You know, I guess we can get into the debate over that, mm-hmm. And that's fine. I'll go with whatever people want, but it certainly shouldn't have skewed data in it, you know, from other contracts that just.
Well, I think in your case, and I'm not sure how you guys employ all the people that you employ, but would all your contracts that are commercial employ 60% of people
no.
with disabilities?
No.
That's what she's saying.
Yeah.
No, a very small percent.
Yeah.
And where are you from?
Goodwill.
Okay, yeah.
Our Source Americas and some very small privates would be the only ones that are DD set aside. No, and we've got ADOC, and no, those are absolutely separate. Absolutely separate. A lot of city contracts.
So it should only be the contracts that came through the set aside meeting that should count towards.
Correct, because we would be way skewing that 1%.
And I think that's open for, and that probably is open for debate. But you know, to me, the key determining factor is it meeting the purpose. And if it's supporting the employment of people with disabilities, I'd be more inclined to say that's the determining factor. You know, but that's going to be hard. So the next easiest thing is just to say all those that have been approved by the state set aside committee are the ones that should be reported on. So that's a little bit of a tough area, but I think if we could get it back to just reporting on those that are approved by the set aside committee, yeah. Get us a baseline. Let's find out where we're at now, mm-hmm. And then let's start to deal with maybe some exceptions that may or should or could be included in the report that are supporting. That didn't come through set aside, but are supporting employment of people with disabilities, and take it one step at a time. So I would say let's go back and get a look at where are we now with what the set aside has approved, and get a number there, and then kind of go from there.
So Betty, while you were out of the room and you volunteered for it.
Okay. yeah, okay.
No, the conversation circled back around to focusing the report on those organizations that have set-aside contracts, but specifically looking at those contracts for the set-aside program. And so because the example was the Goodwill, as you heard before you were out of the room for a moment there, Goodwill has numerous contracts with the state, not just set-aside contracts. And so by having all of their other contracts involved there, it could put a little bit of a different spin on the way that GAO pulls the report and the information. If they just go, oh, Goodwill is, and so let's pull all that material, well, then that skews it. So we need to find out if there's a way to target simply the set-aside components for them and for other organizations to make sure that the set aside report is targeted at set aside activities.
So only let me make sure I'm understanding you. Only the set aside contracts that we currently have is what you want the reporting on, and even if someone is approved on the 501c and they do their own little, you know, little side things, even if it's not one of our set-aside contracts, that dollar amount should not count?
Yeah, that runs contrary to the procurement code, I think, in certain areas. You know,
and so
because part of the procurement code says, you know, if you're doing it, looking for a request for quote or whatever, it says you can look at set-asides. And this is work that doesn't rate to a contract. So you know, then what do you do then? It doesn't say, go ahead and get approval before you finish this request for quote from the set-aside committee and wait 90 days. That's the problem there as well. There's a lot of set-aside work that's truly set-aside work that's not going to be reported in contracts.
Exactly. That's my point.
And the problem is if we had attempted to do it that way, the way that you guys are talking about it, it would be under-reporting. It looks like it's over-reporting now, and it would probably be under-reported the other way.
Well, it could be possible that after a contract's award, if someone believes that their contract fits in and wants to be part of that set-aside number, that 1%, that they can present their data in front of the committee to have it actually approved as a set-aside. Otherwise it's not a set aside, because if we're saying you have to go through the the committee meeting to have it approved, I think it needs to be a black and white, because if you start mixing gray in there, it's going to be hard to manage. You can open it up to people that are set aside participants, but that doesn't make it a set aside, even if they are awarded it, until the committee reviews it and makes sure that they have 60% of the employees that are working on that contract. But I think that adds to the conversation that word endeavor to 1% needs some teeth, because right now, you know, the existence of this meeting means endeavor, but isn't in fact getting more contracts for people with disabilities. I mean, we're doing a lot of good work here, but I think it does have to go through the committee as one of the keys to being a set-aside.
And the intent is to grow the set-aside, and I just feel that, okay, if they put in their application for certification and we do certify them, why shouldn't it count? We're just discussing, you know,
The statute says they endeavor 1% of purchasing, not 1% of contracts. That's what I'm saying. There's a difference between purchasing and contracting necessarily, and we may not rise to the level of a contract at certain instances. Or,
by way of argument, the statute says 1% of their new purchases or contracts.
Okay. Well, that's why. Okay.
So it can go either way.
Yeah.
But I remember it said purchasing.
So yeah. Purchases. And purchases is the first one, so it's kind of, it doesn't really define it, so it does leave it kind of wobbly.
Well, I think. I think if we could vet the vendors, I think that would probably help things out. And you can even with goodwill, you could probably segment by some. You'd have to maybe enter a different vendor number for set aside, Betty, and then it would, you know, and then you could report it correctly.
Couldn't you just key off contracts that are awarded through the committee?
Yeah, you could, but I'm saying you'd be serious. You'd be probably under-reporting is what I'm saying. Because...
Most definitely.
Only until everything was vetted through the committee.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, if there's a what I'm saying is, I think Betty is correct in that we should be able to report things that aren't necessarily on a contract as set aside monies, because it's telling you that you know you can use them for smaller, and we're talking about things that are under $100,000. I don't know how much that impacts, but you know it's something, you know, and there's a lot of that things, a lot of these could be like project work as well, you know, where you're having a job for $75,000 and you want to have it done by through the set aside. There's legitimate commodities that you see these set aside companies have that lend itself to that type of stuff as well, as opposed to just an ongoing 5-year service commitment or so. Okay.
That's an example of that.
And we also have a reporting process. The reporting process asks you for the contract number, it asks you for a lot of information. So can you show me Catholic Social Services report, quarterly report?
I will go back and
I know
you're just saying, yeah, but they probably, you know, as far as I see, they just give up a total, right?
I'm not so sure we don't. If we just look at the processes that are available to us, a little tweak here, a little tweak there, I don't think it's rocket science to get at this information. I really don't. What we, the question we want to ask is simply this. Does this contract create employment for people with disabilities? Not to provide services to people with disabilities by a bunch of non-disabled people. Does it provide employment for people with disabilities? Does it have a direct impact on our program definition and purpose? Because remember, we had to go define this for ourselves, and this has been approved by the committee now. So our purpose is to advance the social and economic goals of people with disabilities and people participating in the state prison inmate work program by creating job opportunities while satisfying the procurement needs of the state and local governments. I'm not saying that we should exclude those, Rick. I'm just saying, let's find a way to do it right and include everything. Okay? We don't have to be, you know, systems that don't work for us are not good systems. So if we're saying, well, that's all I can put in the computer and that's all it'll spit out, that's a really, any more nowadays in the world that we live in, that's not a good answer. A good answer is let's get the system to get the information that we need to report properly or have a methodology to do it so that we can get the information. So I would suggest to you that we don't throw our hands in the air, because that's what we've done every time up to this point. Don't know. Yeah, it's complicated. And too many contracts. There is a way to get at this information. I would be happy to offer a resource to work with ADOA to try to figure this thing out. And Rick, it would be great if you would participate in that process as well, because you do know the procurement process. And all I'm trying to say is there's a way to do this. We may not know exactly what it is right now, but we want to stick with what the program and purpose is and then define everything that lines up with that in terms of reporting a number to the governor and others. And if we get that right, we have a good idea of where we're at and how well we're doing towards our goal of endeavoring to do 1% of purchases or contracts. Because if you don't measure something, I measurements are really important in life, and goals are really important. I don't even know where the measurement is right now.
So is the ask on this one, for someone, and Dick, you offered up a resource, but someone to work with Betty on defining and working through what would be the key elements to help the final report?
And the thing is, she's saying it comes from payables, but as of the 1st of July, the entire finance system is going to be replaced.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, so I think you'd probably have to first look and see how it can be evaluated through the new payable, I mean, through the new finance system. You know, through post breeze or whenever this this whole thing takes place. Yeah. I mean, it may be it probably, you know, it's replacing an antiquated system, so it probably will be easier to get this information.
Yeah,
And so it may it may be real easy, just flipping a switch. I don't know.
I'm just going to say this out loud without making a motion, Tom, but I guess what I would recommend is that the committee recommend to this subcommittee recommend to the committee the appointment of another subcommittee, and the subcommittee is to research this issue of reporting and reporting the 1%. How did we say it on the agenda? How to measure the set aside goal of 1%? That's the subcommittee subject matter. I think this committee is doing a good job on the policy procedure level. This is a deeper one, unless we want to take it on. But I think it's a little bit different and requires a different set of skills to look at.
Well, and Betty, I would ask the question: does it have to be a subcommittee, or could it be a work group, or something by some other name?
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be a subcommittee, because you're probably talking about two or three people that just, and they're going to be just reading reports and trying to, you know, they need some tech people, essentially.
I would think it would be a work group, but from the sounds of it, you know, it sounds to me that it's going to go further than that, and we're really going to get into all the strategic activities of it. And I just want to remind you guys that it, the statute does say, you know, purchases or contracts as far as the reporting regarding the set aside.
So there may need to be some definition in relation to understanding how that statement is about purchases or contracts.
Is there a purchase, when you make purchases for any of this, there's a specific number that's associated to it, I'm assuming? Like a contract number is for our contracts, by a purchase number?
Yeah, there'll be a purchase order.
Purchase order.
By that, yeah, which refers to that
even
contract
in your old
number.
System, I'm telling you, the way that you're going to manage this is that you'll just take all your approved contracts through the committee, create a separate database, and run a crystal report through your server, your old or new, and it'll give you the dollar value to what you're trying to report on.
Well, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it can be reported on. You know, it can be reported on. That's what I'm saying. But we the idea is that we have to vet the vendor base, because that's where it's going to be pulling data from. And if the vendor, you know, isn't it? I mean, that's where I'm assuming. So if it's reporting on the wrong vendor, you know, a vendor that's not a justifiable set-aside vendor, you know, that can be, you know, just removed from the database and the program go through. So that I think is what we have to do. We have to look and see. And like I'm saying, you know, you have goodwill, but you can load the vendor database. You know, we have duplicate, triplicate vendor numbers for the same vendor, you know, and then you would utilize the set-aside vendor number when you do a purchase order or a contract. I mean, there's like Staples had 7, I think, you know, there's always a way to get around that, even if you have a duplicate responsibility.
Yeah, I do like the idea of a work group. Because I do think it would take resources from the systems people, or you know, what I call IT, to participate, and it would start with a definition. It really would start with a definition. What is the definition of what should be included here? And then we go backwards into the system and say, okay, how can we pull this data consistent?
Well, somebody, if they're running a report, they have to have something. I mean, the payables has something that determines it's a set-aside.
And
it can't be just 501c, because we've got, I mean, if you look in the system, they've got the Girl Scouts and other, you know, there are 501c.
So maybe the place to start is what is defined.
You know, or how they have defined.
How is the report working today, and what are the parameters that are being used to pull the data? Okay. And then we try to go through the information from there. I mean, there would be lots of questions that I would have. Okay, well, you've included this. Okay, how does this particular purchase or contract support the set-aside program? And then start to, you know, I don't have the answer right now, but I think there'd be a lot of discovery that would take place in the process that would lead us to something better.
Yeah. So, Betty, would the appropriate way to do this be on the next agenda for the set-aside committee? A recommendation for a work group to research the reporting. Now, Dick, you said that you could provide a resource.
It'd either be me or one of my folks.
Okay, Manny, you too. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got 3 volunteers, but it would take, I believe, someone from the reporting side, whether that's a fiscal or IT, from. So that would be the appropriate way to do that, is make the recommendation at the set-aside meeting?
Yes.
Okay. And that's, because it's a recommendation, then it's nothing we need to vote on here, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Is that true?
I think that's true.
I don't know.
I think
always forget Robert's rules of order.
Yeah. So I think we're okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Tom, you won't be there at the next 22nd, 23rd?
Yeah, 22nd, 23rd. I'll be in Washington, D.C., so that's for...
That'll fall. Okay.
Yeah, because I know you couldn't have been at the one on the 8th.
That's correct.
So...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Betty, you'll have the minutes done before then, so...
Yes.
Because I didn't take a lot of notes in our discussion here, but I do pretty much understand what we're going for.
Okay.
You got it.
Okay.
Okay. Underneath agenda three, item number two was the update for the set aside website, and Betty, you pretty much gave that a little earlier.
Okay.
Anything else to add in relation to it?
No, just other than, you know, the questions that you guys have regarding the reporting, the updates on the website, the, you know, whenever you guys get a chance, just go in there and take a look at it. And if you guys have any suggestions where we could make it better or any suggestions, I welcome that.
Now, do you have the ability to make the changes on the website to?
Yes,
you do?
I do.
Fantastic.
And so that's why,
that's,
you know,
great.
they've been updated. But yeah, as we start going through all of this, our policies and procedures and changing, it's a lot of things that are behind the scene.
Yeah.
Is requiring a lot of time as well. And now you're suggesting another committee, so then that's another thing that I'll have to be at and take.
Yeah.
You know,
it'll be less time.
I made it a work group. It was
right. Oh, that's right. That's true. That's true. Okay.
I'm trying for you, Betty. I'm trying.
No, but I'm open to any suggestions.
Okay. It looks really good. If you guys haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
Take a look. It looks really sharp.
Good. Okay. Next item that we have is a discussion on the procedures to ensure vendors meet the 60% of direct labor performed by individuals with disabilities requirement.
I was working on this one, and I thought initially I could just go to Source America and pull their procedures.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I looked at it, the more I realized that there's a lot of sophisticated reporting tools that are in place through those agencies to be able to provide the information to demonstrate certified disability. And there's a lot of audit procedures, and there's groups that go through and perform those audits when needed or on a semi-regular basis. So one of the questions that came to mind is, as I document this process, is who would do that? Who's going to be the group that goes out and makes sure that there's a file on every person that's claimed to be a disabled individual working on that contract, and making sure that those obligations are being fulfilled? Is it going to be the committee, or is there going to be a person within the state?
Or who would do that and how?
It would have to be someone that's independent, I believe, so definitely. But that was one of my biggest sticking points.
It's the number one obstacle is the whole concept of going in and looking at data to try to make sure that it's being performed by people with disabilities. I mean, that can be defined and done.
Mm-hmm.
It's the time and the resources to be able to do that. And we have suggested or talked about in the past that there needs to be pretty much a full-time person devoted to set-aside. Betty,
We're getting there.
And I would see as one of their responsibilities that on occasion, I mean, there's not that many of us. You can make a couple of visits a month and probably cover everybody. You visit the agency. You ask to see documentation on medical certifications. You look at their, you do a quick review of their labor reporting process. And just in questioning, and let the process evolve. So it would start fairly simple.
Mm-hmm.
With a visit.
Yep.
And maybe some review of some of the records, and then evolve from there. But without the person to do it, yes.
And even information on the procedures, for that as well, for the people that are already have current contracts,
so
they know what to expect as well.
Yeah, so that might be ideal. So we're not going to get ideal immediately. So the next best thing is to define a reporting process that has the signature of the executive director, president, whoever it is of the CNA, that reports quarterly that you've met the 60% ratio.
Yeah.
And it's signed. And you just have to come up with what data are you going to require from that organization for them to sign off on. And the key piece of data being that you've listed the contracts and you're attesting to the fact that 60% of the labor has been performed by people with disabilities.
So would there be an expectation that there's a, whether it be a sheet or, you know, just a written timesheet, or should it, you know, or the equivalent would be a clock in, clock out from different departments within your time system, showing a record that if someone went in and reviewed your hours, would that, would it need to be that granular, or is it just someone, an ED or a CEO, well, signing something saying, yeah, this did happen?
I think there's different ways to look at it, and we can actually use a couple different methods to verify some of the information. I know a lot of the documents that we fill out and send to the federal government, the governor, you know, signs a form that says he attests to this particular thing, or that we're in compliance with that particular thing. So I think that would be a methodology that we could use here, is that, you know, either a quarterly report or, you know, some period report, where the CEO does sign and says that, you know, we are in compliance with the 60%, and here's the numbers and the figures to do that, yet also reserve the opportunity or the right that, you know, once a position does get established by DOA, that site visits could be conducted to just verify that information. I think it's a, I think from this perspective, again, understanding the resources and the environment that we all live in on the state side of things, we have to follow that famous Reagan quote that we'll trust, but we will verify as soon as we can. You know, but that, I think that's part of the, one of the ways that I think we can at least put a practice into place where we are taking a serious look at the 60% requirement. And, you know, and again, it's a level of understanding and agreement with our, with the CNAs and with the other organizations, that 60% level is met, and if we don't have some faith or belief in them, then we're going to really struggle through a process that would be very, very time consuming and very, very detailed. Well, let me sit down and look at all your files. Let me see these papers. And I would venture to say, I know on the DES side, we don't necessarily have time to do that in every case. Not that it wouldn't be nice to, but I would venture that DOA is probably in similar circumstances as us, and the resources then call for alternative methods of verification. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be the way to do that.
Sure. So in the language, should it say that there should be a documented, verifiable form of accounting that this is actually happening, so that if someone actually did go in there, there's an expectation that they're going to see something when they walk in. We don't have to tell them how to document it, it's just that someone's going to be able to walk in and see something that says, yes, this really is happening.
I would hope so.
Yeah. And should that be added to when folks want to get a contract, should that be part of what they're providing, is that this is our process? To demonstrate it.
Well, I would ask the question, you know, Dick, I know that, you know, for you.
Yeah, we have to do it.
Yeah, you have to do it. You actually, I know from our prior discussions, you meet more than a 60% level.
Correct.
At AIB, 75%. At AIB. So how do you?
We have a complete labor reporting system that documents. We have a, you know, onboarding process that basically requires the medical documentation to be on file before you even start work. And then as you work, you're recording your time on all contracts, wherever you work, whether it's directly on a contract or indirectly through an admin job. And then all that data is brought together to do the reporting on every single, all of the items that we have in all of our business units. So it's a fairly sophisticated process. It's well-defined, it's documented, it has procedures, and we are audited every 2 years. You can just, it's just gonna happen. Mm-hmm. Okay,
our CNAs underneath that same
expectation? All of the folks.
We're in the same boat.
All of the folks in the Ability One program, and then I have a, and then once I gather all the data internally, I not only, I have to then fill in an electronic, nationally, you know, through the Ability One program, an electronic form that has all of that data, and then and ask for it in various, you know, in various questions that you have to answer about your contracts and different things. And then it goes electronically, and that all is submitted into a huge database that they report on the whole program. And then, like I said, every 2 years, I'm going to have an auditor, and they're going to be able, they want verifiable data, evidence, signed time cards on everything that we do, everything that we've reported.
So you need to go through that same process?
We're the same thing because we're all source ability one.
So in essence, couldn't those audit reports be the verification of the 60%?
For us, they could. Yeah. The thing is that I don't think everybody in the room has those requirements.
Yeah.
And so we had to go to great lengths. I mean, these are not things you snap your fingers and do.
Okay.
Yeah.
These are systems and so the burden of reporting is not something I want to necessarily place on an organization like Quality Connections. Would you be able to do that, or do you do any form of it? So there's no requirement to do that. But I would think maybe, you know, we could kind of think about this and maybe come up with, you know, for us, I think you're right. It's verifiable for us because I have a requirement to make sure and have all the data behind it. It is for you and for some others, and maybe we need to come up with a method for folks like Quality Connections to be able to do it. And so maybe they don't have all the data, but you could go visit, take a look at the activities taking place and have some kind of a verification that it's 60%.
Well, and I guess Betty, tell me if I can't do this, but Armando, not to put you on the spot or anything, but how do you as an organization show compliance with the 60%? How do you feel you do that?
We fill out the quarterly reports that both ADOA and APAT request from us. The way that we actually count the individuals working on the contract is basically through a referral method. If they were referred by DDD or RSA, then they do have a documented disability.
And then they're assigned to a specific job task.
A specific job task which is related to the contract.
And then you can just count heads and
right.
Divide it out.
So it's simple. Yeah, so essentially it's there. You get it on a referral type basis,
right.
and that's how you designate that, yes, this is an individual that meets that requirement.
Right.
So, you know. And in that case, you know, like for Quality Connections, it would, you know, mm-hmm. following the report that Armando sends in, that could be the, you know, the way that they attest to, yeah, here's how we meet that 60% requirement. And then at some point in time, when Betty gets some help, then we could send someone up to flag and look at,
right.
Although I did that last week, so.
I think that might work. I mean, that might be all you can do for the other folks who don't have the sophisticated reporting that organizations like Purchase First.
Well, the other question would be, how are you accounting for the other half, the 40% that aren't disabled on your contracts? How would the committee know that you have a 60-40? We know you have certified disabilities working on it, so you have 100%. How do we know that the other 40 are non-disabled or whatever that number is?
Well, we've never had to report that to anyone.
But that's a valid question to what we're trying to measure, is you have to know what's being worked from both ends.
Yeah, it's kind of like saying, what are the total number of employees that are working on this contract? 50. How many people working on this contract are disabled? 30. Okay, 30 divided by 50 is a percentage, right? So he's right, you have to know the total in order to get
the
percentage.
Yeah.
And I think that's easy enough.
Yeah.
And it probably could be changed on the quarterly reporting. So I think what we need to do, you took on this task, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a mess.
Yes.
I'm glad for that. Is maybe come back to us based on this discussion with a proposal.
Yeah.
You know, of how we might be able to do this. And I'd certainly be willing to. You know, you can use me as a sounding board.
Okay.
And trying to come up with something.
Now, I speak from a very, our systems are advanced because we've been forced into that situation. So I would like to be able to speak to Armando or someone else. Sure. Is that going to be okay to see what would work
sure.
for them? Because I don't have that perspective, really.
Sure.
All
Steve can help you get that out to a few folks that have those types of contracts.
That'd be even better to get, to get a perspective.
Get a sense from a couple of providers.
Mine's is just going to be a very technological report, and maybe you guys are going to have a manual report for all I know, but it'd be good to know.
That's okay.
Yes.
Okay. So there's a.
All right.
Okay, so that covers that agenda item. Next thing on the list here, future agenda items. Members, anything to bring up as items that we need to look at in the future?
I think as we went through the discussion today, one of the questions that comes up in my mind is the purchasing portion of the requirement. And is there a requirement for the purchasing piece to have people with disabilities involved, and how is that proven?
I'm not sure.
So you're saying in your guys' discussion earlier about the purchasing piece of a $75,000 purchase, where is the disability portion of that purchase? I just don't understand the purchase. That's why I asked for an example, is I don't understand it completely.
You've got the part right there, right?
Yeah. Because the purchasing and that is down here.
The contracts only have the 60% requirement.
Is that it?
No, it says 1%. It says all governmental units shall endeavor to set aside at least 1% of their new purchases or contracts for products, materials, services, and entities that are prescribed in subsection D, which is this up here, right?
Right.
But if you go to the last sentence of A, to qualify for set-aside contracts, certified nonprofit agencies must maintain an employment ratio of at least 60%. So it only talks about contracts on the 60%.
Yeah, and I think in D, I think it says we buy from a set-aside. It doesn't say on a set-aside contract necessarily, right?
Correct.
So I think that's a differentiation.
For sure.
Yeah. As pointed out, the last sentence of A focuses it towards contracts, but then section E is where it throws out that the 1% is off of purchases or contracts.
Yeah.
So Betty, why'd you write this law confusing? Your DOA, everything gets blamed on you.
I'll take it.
And that's based on it's a statute.
This is the statute piece of it. Because then the rules are followed up here.
Yeah.
Okay. So any other items for future agendas that we can think of right now? Okay. If we do come up with anything, we'd have to just submit them to Betty in time for the next set-aside subcommittee. And next item, committee comments and suggestions. We kind of covered that already.
Well, I did want to ask, when you brought up having another subcommittee to handle the side as far as on the reporting, and we already have a few volunteers for it already, you know, when we bring it up to the board, you know, I don't know if there's somebody else on the board that might want to add themselves to it as well.
Yeah, so that's not, our recommendation is not saying, well, if others want to participate, absolutely. And I definitely think, as we discussed, we need someone from either IT or the fiscal area, to, you know, who handles the actual report that we can sit down with and get the details about how they pull it, what they pull, what we think they should pull, and then we go through the conversation there. So yeah, it's not just that closed group. It's going to have a few more individuals involved there.
Okay.
Item number 6 on the agenda is the call to the public. So I'd open it up this time for anybody from the public that's comments.
I just wanted to say,
For the record, state your name
Jennifer
and organization.
Jennifer Bear with Valley Life. The 60%, if there could be language around what would happen if an agency wasn't able to provide that evidence, or if they were showing that they were not having that percentage, what sort of language could be put in that would get them there? What would be the time frame? Is there a penalty? Would they lose the contract? Something around what could be done to...
What we wrote, and I don't know if I have it here, what we wrote in the form, the product cost and service thing, and I don't think I have the form with me, but there's some language in there that you can have a ramp-up period, and that if you first get a state set-aside contract, you have approximately 6 months to get your ratio in line, so that you can start with less than 60%.
And I think I was thinking of if you were like a year or two in,
yeah,
and through a visit or some sort of other process, it was found that you were not at the 60% that you said you would be.
Yeah, we haven't gone that far, and are not that sophisticated, but typically in the Ability One program, you get put on a Get Well program. And what you have to do is you have to come in to the Ability One Commission and explain why you're not meeting the ratio, and what's your Get Well plan to get there, and what date are you going to get there. So, and the expectation is that you'll get there very quickly. Then if you don't do it, your contract is pulled. Okay? And it's given, it's not necessarily pulled from the program, it's given to another set-aside that has the capability of performing that contract. Okay. Now, we don't have language. We haven't gotten that far to have that kind of the language. But that's a really good question. You know, you have the requirement, so if you don't meet it, what happens?
So what happens with you guys over where you are with the Ability One? If they don't meet that 60% or whatever, is there a form or something that
they
sign?
If they go out and audit, we get audited every 2 years. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we're reporting quarterly.
Okay.
With signature that we're meeting the deal. If you report, like for instance, if we had for some reason a month that we didn't meet the requirement, mm-hmm. and I sign the report, it goes in, it's going to be an immediate flag in your system. Mm-hmm. They're going to send someone or at least call you and ask you what you're doing about getting to the required percentage. If there isn't a satisfactory answer, or if you know it's not just a little blip, and it's not going to be fixed in a very, very near future, they will ask you. You have to fly to Washington D.C. to then stand in front of the commission when they meet quarterly. Stand in front of the commission and explain to them why you haven't met the percentage and what you're going to do to fix it. And then they'll give you a certain amount of time. It's not predetermined. A certain amount of time to get to the percentage, and if you don't make it by then, your contract is gone. It's a very simple process, and it has happened where contracts have been pulled and reassigned to other CNAs.
There's also been examples of organizations that were purposely defrauding the contracts, and there was legal action taken against the CEOs of those organizations. They're serving prison sentences for that. It's basically you're lying to the government on what you're doing. You're falsely acquiring contracts.
Yeah. Falsified statements.
Yeah.
And it's only happened on it's very, very rare.
Yeah.
It's an occurrence that might occur once every 10 years or something, and it involves one or two. Bad people are everywhere.
Yeah.
And sometimes they get involved in nonprofits as well.
But I think the point is also that through attrition or other means, sometimes staff will leave, and I think it's as you mentioned, Dick, if you do fall underneath, you get a period of time. Granted,
they're
it's
correct.
Focused and better work on this quickly, but I think it's fair to develop some procedures to identify that should an organization fall out of compliance later on, there's a period of time by which the expectation is they'll get back to compliance levels.
Yeah.
And so it just sounds like we haven't established that process in writing so that we can do that.
I could go, at least for this committee, pull the language that they use in the Ability One program and at least have a starting point for us to take a look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I have a contract that if I lose one person with a disability, I fall out of compliance. And if I gain that person, I'm at 80%. So one quarter that I report, I'll be out of compliance, and they don't come after us for that. They understand that I lost a person, and I got to go get that person back. If that happens for a couple more quarters, then they'll come and talk to us about it. But
yeah. When your staffing levels are low, one person makes a world of difference. Yeah. So okay. So Dick, if you could
and we can bring that back for the next conversation.
Sure.
Okay. Any other members of the public wish to speak?
I like the accountability factor in doing that. It keeps everything above board, keeps people honest, not saying that they're not. Provides structure and something to measure by. I think that's very important.
Okay.
I have a question. I know this is open to the public, but how is the public notified about the meetings? And I don't know how I start coming because we don't have a set-aside contract or anything, but if a company is applying for a set-aside contract that really affects the business I'm in, are we some way notified that this is going to be happening, or how is the public notified that these meetings are coming?
Well, it's done through the open meeting notice.
We have what we call an open meeting law. And we send out an agenda, and anyone that comes to me or comes to the meetings that we currently have, we try to look at the sign-in sheet, and the next time we have another meeting, they're automatically put on the list as the interested parties.
Yeah, I've been notified ever since the first time I came.
Exactly.
But I just wonder how, the other business people, if a contract is affecting their business, do they have an opportunity to come in and present their side as to why they shouldn't be a set-aside contract? Or I don't know how they're notified.
They're also posted in accordance with the open meeting.
Exactly. Exactly.
Most people know about it because I didn't know that there was.
Well, I would say that, and this is coming from my history at DES, and so Betty can give the perspective for DOA. Our requirement to post for open public meetings is, number one, as Betty described, it's a process where you send it out to your known individuals of interest, whether it be through prior attendance at meetings or they have some sort of an agreement or a connection with you, so you get it to those individuals. And for the rest of them, we have at DES, it's a bulletin board it's at 1789 and at 1717 West Jefferson, where all open meetings are posted there. I know on certain times we've actually gone as far as to put it in the newspaper, but that's not a normal process that we do.
Noticed the bulletin board downstairs for the first time. I've been in this building 100 times, and I noticed for the first the open,
They just recently put that out last week. That's what I was going to say. So not just set aside any DOA meeting that we have scheduled will now go outside the front door. What I also do is once we've established the agenda, we take it over to what we call our GSD, and they put it out on ADOA's website. So it's on ADOA's website. It's on our state procurement office website, and then it is also in the kiosk in the middle of the Capitol building. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And if somebody expressed an interest, then we just automatically put them on the mailing list, whether they've gone to a meeting or not.
Thank you.
Any other public comments? Okay, with that then, I'd like to get a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Okay, second. This meeting's adjourned.
And it's 10:36.
Everything's complicated.